gentlemen, welcome you all to Drive Through HR. First of all, thank you so much for tuning into Drive Through HR, and we really, really appreciate that. And I'm your host, Nisha, and William is traveling today, so he's not available on the show. Well, last month we have celebrated Drive Through HR Hit Series 2014. That's where the topmost shows that were downloaded and listened by our audience. So hope you all enjoyed it. And we are glad to be back live on air, and we have lined up amazing guests in each day of this month. So stay tuned. So without further ado, let's kick off this month with a wonderful guest. First time on the show, please welcome Kristen Harcourt. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Nisha. It's great to be here.
Wonderful. We are glad to have you here with us today. So if you can talk a little bit about yourself, our audience can learn more about you.
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, I'm Kristen Harcourt, and I work at a company called the McQuaig Institute. We're a global organization, but our head office is in Toronto, Canada. So today is a wonderful day for us because Monday is going to be a holiday, so I'm about to start off the long weekend, so this is a great way to kick it off. At the McQuaig Institute, we specialize in behavioral personality assessments, so different types of tools specifically to be used around talent management. So organizations use our tools to basically help them understand people better to be able to in turn make better people decisions. So clients are sometimes using our tools in hiring to help to get some more insight in terms of who the people are that they're meeting with, what they can expect from them once they actually start working with the organization so that they can ideally hire someone who's going to be the right fit for the organization, for the job, for the culture, for the team. Our tools are used quite often with current employees as well, so through talent management, helping leaders create self-awareness and leadership development, helping current employees, whether they're leaders or individual contributors, understand their strengths, leverage them even better, and get stronger in areas where they might not be as naturally comfortable, so helping them really become all-round stronger employees, so to really engage and coach top talent. And our tools are used quite often for team building as well. So really anything around helping employees, individuals become even more effective, and then through hiring get the best people, get the best talent for the role.
Great. Well, we look forward to learning more about assessment tools and how that can empower businesses by looking beyond what's in the resume and make smart hiring decisions. So before we get to that, let's ask our regular question, what's keeping you up at night these days?
So I definitely would say in terms of what's keeping me up at night, myself as well, because I'm very involved in what's going on with my clients, but specifically what's keeping our clients up at night, I think a couple of the things that would be interesting to share with your audience, we specifically just finished completing a global talent recruitment survey, and this survey went out to 600 HR professionals globally, and we just recently got the results. In the last couple of weeks, we were sharing that with our audience, and there's some really interesting things that came out from that study, and I'd love to share a couple of different things because this isn't me just telling you what I believe my clients are staying up, are keeping them up at night, but they have actually let us know this is what's going on. Some of the interesting stats, to start off with one, when we were asking the HR professionals, what are the things that you're finding are big challenges as in terms of hiring? 51% of people said it's hard to find employees who fit their culture. So that's something that, of course, at the McQuaig Institute we help clients with. But it's interesting to look at culture and, you know, what can an organization do to help understand when they're meeting with potential candidates to really figure out if they're going to be the right fit for their culture? Because as 51% of these people are letting us know, that's a real problem for them. And one of the things we found through our tools and how we help clients is, you know, it's looking at all of the different areas. When you're hiring an individual, you're hiring them for the job, so you want to make sure they're the right fit for the role. But also you need to look, are they the right fit for our overall culture? Are they going to fit into that? Are they the right fit for the team? So the individuals that they're going to be working with, are they going to be a good fit for those individuals? And then also, are they a good fit for their manager? Because that's one of the things that we found is huge. So it's not just a matter of hiring the right person, but two-thirds of employees quit their boss, not the job. So not only are you wanting to make sure they're the right fit for the job, but you're wanting to make sure going forward, whoever they're going to be reporting into, how can that manager and that employee work really well together so that in turn that individual does stay engaged. They are going to, hopefully that leader will help that individual to even become a stronger individual, be able to really leverage their natural talents.
Wonderful. This is an interesting insight that you have shared right now, Christine. And I totally agree with you. Two-thirds of employers quit the boss, not the job. And so what do you recommend for those recruiters or HR professionals out there and even managers? Because we know managers make the hiring decisions, not the HR. So what do you recommend to those listeners in order to find out if it is a culture fit or not? Well, as you said, when we talk about culture fit, different teams has its own team dynamics, right? So how do we go about making that right hiring decisions?
So I think one piece is really making sure that the hiring manager is invested in the interview process and involved in it. And that's something that else that came out through our study. One of the frustrations and challenges HR finds is that hiring managers don't have enough time. So hiring managers aren't getting as involved in the interview process as they would like them to. So one is being very clear about, you know, what are we looking for in this role? What does success look like in this position? You know, what kind of, from our standpoint, we're always talking behaviors and personality, but what does that look like so that as part of the interview process, they're really probing and drilling down into those areas. And one of the things we find as well is HR by nature, you know, they're interviewing all the time and you guys are doing tons of things to get trained and you're very, very comfortable in the interview process. Well, sometimes hiring managers who, as you said, Nietzsche, are the ultimate individuals making the hiring decision, they're not necessarily as comfortable doing interviewing. And even when they are interviewing, the things that they're looking at are not actually the things that are going to be having the biggest impact on whether that person is going to be the right fit. So they might be looking at things in terms of, do they have the right skill set? Do they have the right education? Do they have all of those types of things, which, of course, are one piece, and those are critical as well, but they're not actually asking questions and probing into things that are actually linking to those behaviors that are going to make them a good fit for the culture, right? So what they need is some assistance around really being able to be structured, be able to be focused, be able to be given tools that are going to allow them to be asking questions, to be probing around those areas which are specific to the culture and whether that person's the right fit. And I think what's happening a lot of times is hiring managers, when they're having the interviews, they're not focusing on those areas. They're asking other questions, which are actually, in the grand scheme of things, not as critical to fit. So what happens is they get the person in the role, and then it ends up being that person doesn't stay with the organization. They're not a good fit because what they were actually looking and focusing on and measuring in the interview was actually not what's most critical to the role.
Yeah, that's true. Well, most of the time they normally focus on the competencies instead of culture fit. Well, and that is one of the reasons that you said they might not be knowing how to go about, you know, assessing skills or probably interviewing the candidates. So what do you recommend to those HR professionals? How can they improve this assessing or interview skills of managers so that we can make sure that they are making the right decisions?
Yeah, so I think the first step would be making sure that as part of the interview question, as part of the interview process, the interview questions they're asking and the things that they're measuring are specifically linked to culture fit, right? So what kind of questions are they asking? So whether you already have your interview guide or whether you can help assist them with creating something that will allow them to probe into those things which are going to be critical to measuring those areas. From our standpoint, when we're working with clients, they actually get access to, as part of the assessment, it's looking at those things, and they get behavior-based interview questions. So if for some reason your hiring managers, and HR is very familiar with this, they're always using behavior-based interview questions or other things that are getting at the key competencies which are more behavior-based. So if hiring managers are not currently doing that, you want to make sure that they are. But the other piece is being very clear before you even start looking at candidates, what are you looking for in this role? What does success look like? What are the behavioral competencies for success in this position? So that you're starting off with a very clear benchmark of what you're looking for, and then as part of the interview process, you're asking questions that are linked to those specific things that you've identified that are required for success in that position. So things such as giving them those specific interview questions. If you're currently working with an assessment tool, you'll find quite often that you will get specific interview questions that are included as part of that. And another piece is just giving them an opportunity to just practice, because even when you do things such as, actually doing role playing, right? Because if you look at the interview questions that are quite often being asked, it's not just you ask the question, you get the answer, and let's move on. It's asking a question and then getting another answer and then probing further and getting another answer and then probing further, and then that's when you get at the actual answer. And sometimes those nuances, hiring managers are not as familiar and not as comfortable. And again, with everything, there's different ranges of ability, right? So some hiring managers are very comfortable, but then you have others that are really not as comfortable, and that what ends up happening is what they're measuring as part of the interview process is not actually what is most important to being successful in the role.
Wonderful. Well, I got to ask you, what is your favorite interview question to be asked?
My favorite interview question? Mm-hmm. So from my standpoint in asking an interview question, I think there isn't one question that should be asked across the board. I think that different candidates for different jobs should be asked different questions. And then from my perspective, because I'm very focused on behavioral and personality, I think what's most critical is based on what you're looking for in that particular role, you ask questions that are aligned and are based on the behaviors for success you're looking for in that role. So, for example, if you're looking for a leader and in that particular position, you need to have somebody who's going to be fearless, they're comfortable taking risks, they're someone who's going to drive for results, they're good at persuading, getting buy-in, they're individuals who are strategic thinkers, they're thinking outside of the box. If that's what the organization has identified that they're looking for in that position, well, then everything that you're doing in that interview process should be probing at those areas. So then asking specific asking questions to get at when that individual can show, and I won't tell you specific question, but what you're basically getting at is trying to get them to show you several examples in the past in other positions where they were able to use that thinking outside of the box, where they were able to persuade the organization to move in a direction, where they were able to drive change, and then, you know, not only be able to give that example, but give specific outcomes and, you know, what worked, what didn't work, because you can learn a lot about an individual as well, that it's all about if someone's willing to take risks, there's going to be some times that things go really well and you have wins, but there's going to be a lot of times where you have fails. And that's great. And as part of the hiring process, you want to really understand and get to know that individual, and you want to hear about some of the fails as well, but it's about what you learned from that situation.
Great. Well, in the beginning, you talked a little bit about the assessment tools that are being used for screening the candidate as well as the current employees as well. So do you see any type of differences in using the assessment tools for the candidates and especially for assessing your current employees?
Yeah, I think that there's a huge opportunity. So what happens sometimes is tools are used as part of hiring, and then so you end up hiring a candidate, they start up with the organization, and then the tool's done. You never use it again. I think that there's a big disconnect, and that's unfortunate because you're losing a lot of value from the tools. Because I think one of the huge next steps is when you start hiring an individual, that person that starts with your organization, as part of that onboarding process, a huge piece that can really create a positive way of starting the relationship between that manager and that new employee is to, right from the beginning, when they start with the organization, that manager talks through that individual they've hired, the assessment, their results, you know, understanding, you know, this is what you bring to the job, these are some of your strengths, these are some of your developmental areas, and guess what? This is who I am, and share their profile, share, you know, this is my management style, this is what you can expect from me. And what a great way of managing expectations and making things not personal. So right from the beginning, that individual who's starting with your organization, how awesome would it be for everybody to know, have that kind of information about the person they're reporting into. We've seen with so many of our clients when they do that as part of the onboarding process. So first off, starting off by, you know, the manager and that new employee talk about where they're similar, where there might be some differences, where they might want to talk about in advance how they might be able to deal with some of those differences. That can go a long, long way for engagement and for that person having a better relationship with their manager. But then in terms of internal employees, so one of the things that I'm so passionate about and I really, really firmly believe in, we all have different talents, we all have different gifts, and a great leader is going to work with an individual and help that person really understand what their talents, what their strengths are, and leverage them and get even stronger in them. And then areas which we could talk about that are more our blind spots, well, we still need to get a little bit stronger in those areas. So through using assessments where you do get that information back, it's great to be able to help those individuals get stronger, but then also get better in areas that don't come as naturally to them. Can be amazing with current employees if we look at leaders. Sometimes individuals move up through the organization, go up the ranks, but they've never had an opportunity to really sit back and have some self-awareness and learn more about themselves, what their leadership style is, so they as well as a leader can be aware of some of their strengths and weaknesses, be more cognizant of it when they're being around coworkers and as well when they're leading their team. And then as leaders as well, as you start to become more comfortable with yourself and you have more self-awareness, that can also help you feel more comfortable around being able to really adapt your leadership style, because you're going to have a whole bunch of different employees reporting into you, different team members who require different things, different personalities. And as you become even more comfortable with yourself, you get better at also being able to adapt and as a leader be able to offer different things to the individuals who are reporting into you who have different needs.
Great. Well, this is such a great segue to my next question. While we're talking, you know, the key to success is all about integrating that assessment tools into other elements of talent management, like we have recruitment, onboarding, performance management, and as you said, succession planning as well. So what do you recommend to our audience in order to, some tips and techniques in order to integrate those assessment tools into other elements of talent management?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing, whenever I hear integrated and whenever I hear implementing a program and using it as part of talent management, the first step always is we got to make sure that the C-suite, we got to make sure that the very top, they get it, they're excited mm-hmm. about it, because if we don't have that, it doesn't go so well.
Oh, yeah, that's always a challenge.
Right? So that's the first step. And then I find when that happens and then it gets communicated out to the organization, then there's that appetite. There's individuals feel comfortable starting to move forward with it and do different things. I think just in terms of the organization and having it as a full-fledged kind of end-to-end talent management tool, It all depends on your organization and where you're at. So some organizations, they are a little bit more advanced. They've had a lot of exposure to things like this. So it's easier for them to be able to come full-fledged and implement this tool and have it as, you know, right away, this is something that we're going to use throughout talent management. Other organizations, it's really more about baby steps. So maybe first off, you start with using it more on the recruiting tool, on the recruiting piece, and then next step, you know, where are we having the most challenges in the organization? Are we having more challenges around onboarding? Are we having more challenges around leaders who kind of need to get a little bit stronger in their people skills? Are we finding that when we did our employee engagement surveys, we heard a lot of employees were saying that we'd like to have more time focused on development. So I think it should come from the organization in terms of what their goals, plans, challenges are. Address those first, and then you know, work your way through, and then eventually you're maybe using it for all of those different aspects. But I think sometimes it's about baby steps, right? And again, it depends on the organization. Some organizations, they're at the stage where it's okay to go full-fledged for every single piece, all of those different pieces of talent management. But some, they're just not there yet. So I think it's really about taking a step back and assessing where you are as an organization, and then where could you get the most bang for your buck, and starting there.
Great. That is such a great insight. Well, as we were talking about the leaders and the executives, are getting this approved, this talent assessment approved from the executives or CEOs, they normally start with, you know, ROI, or probably they normally ask about the impact on the business. So what do you recommend, or what do you say, how can we measure the impact of assessment on the business very particularly?
Yes, of course. So that's always the first thing that comes from the CEO, showing the return on investment. So sometimes it's interesting, you know, I've had some very savvy HR professionals that go right into the office and say, okay, so I'll show you the numbers. If we just save one bad hiring decision, which they show the return on investment, somebody who they hire with the organization leaves after 18 months, it's a senior executive position, there's lots of data on that that can show, you know, that can cost you anywhere from $100,000 to $300,000. Mm-hmm. So, and again, it depends on the role. But if we start looking at that data and the cost that is associated with when you make a bad hire and show those types of numbers, and if you can have, there's always, of course, the tangibles and the intangibles that are associated with turnover. But whenever you can show those numbers and show, hey, guess what? Like, so this is how much it costs if just one bad hiring decision happens and they leave after 18 months. And this is the cost of using an assessment tool. Why wouldn't we use an assessment tool, right? So I think when you start to show those numbers and see, like, this is how costly it is to us when we make a bad hiring decision, or even in terms of looking at those numbers for individuals who didn't end up staying with your organization because they were disengaged, those ones are a little bit trickier because you have to be able to show those. Of course, when you're talking to the CEO, they want to have those measurable numbers, and those can sometimes be a little bit trickier. But anything that you can be able to provide in terms of data and what it costs for when individuals leave the organization and are not a good fit, I find that goes a long way.
Great, great. So what do you foresee happening in the assessment industry, especially in the technology industry? Some we have assessment tools. So what are some technologies that you would recommend to our audience, and what do you foresee happening in that particular industry?
Specifically in technology?
Mm-hmm.
So individuals who are working in technological environments?
No. I was asking about the role of technology in the assessment perspective.
Oh, okay. So in terms of being able to have something, I think in terms of assessment tools and how they work, everything has become very streamlined and very easy. So anything that you can do to try to streamline the process. So, for example, a lot of times our clients, they'll want our tool to be used with their applicant tracking system. You want to be able to have a tool that can move quickly. So one of the things we were talking about earlier is hiring managers and getting them involved in the process and they don't have a lot of time. So anytime you're using, in terms of technology, and you're using a tool, you want to make sure, from my standpoint and what I hear from my clients, you know, time is money. Like, things are going so fast. So anything you can do to create efficiencies and make it so that things are happening quickly. So I know specifically when we're working with clients, they love that our assessment takes 15 to 20 minutes to complete, whether that's a candidate, whether that's internally, benchmarks are being created by hiring managers. So I just think in terms of technology, one of the things that is just going to keep on happening is it's all about efficiencies, right? So anything that you can do to provide information to those stakeholders that's going to provide value that can be done quickly is a win-win situation.
Great. So what are your tips to our audience to reduce turnover?
To reduce turnover?
Mm-hmm.
First off, ideal situation is being very clear about what you're looking for in a role. So to be, in terms of benchmarking, when you're deciding what you're looking for in a position, I think that it's better to spend more time up front, even though sometimes it's things like, oh, I don't have a lot of time and we want to do things quickly. It's better to spend a little bit more time up front and do it properly than to later on realize we should have spent a little bit more time and have quite a few of these hires that don't work out. So I think it's also important for all key stakeholders, so HR, hiring managers, all work together to be clear about what you're looking for in a role, so that there's consensus, so that everybody on the same page, so that there's accountability from everybody. I think that can go a long way. I think in terms of current employees that, you need to be, a lot of companies say, employees are our greatest asset, but are they actually investing in their employees? So individuals that are with your organization, you really want to spend time working on developing them, on doing coaching. One of the big things as well, I mean, a lot of times performance reviews, they happen at the end of the year. But coaching mm-hmm. can't be just waiting to have a development discussion at the end of the year. Coaching needs to be ongoing, and coaching needs to be live and happening on the job when it's occurring. So really helping equip leaders to make them comfortable having coaching discussions and having them more often than not, right? And not just about talking about the negatives, right? You could have been doing this like this. It's not just talking about all the things they're not doing right. It's talking also about what you're doing really well and helping them, learn how they could get even better at doing that. So especially when you start to look at things like Gen Y and millennials, they really need that. A lot of the things that you find with that demographic is they really, really love coaching and development. And so to make sure, and I think everybody in an organization really likes that, and to be getting also the positives, not just focusing on what they're not doing well. So I think that's a huge piece of reducing turnover, is really keeping your current employees engaged. And I think one of the ways of really engaging them is always helping to work on their development, but also having those ongoing coaching discussions with them.
Wonderful. Well, Christine, it's been a wonderful show. Thank you so much for being here with us, sharing your lunchtime with our audience. And we really, really appreciate that. So where can people connect with you and come and find you and find out more details about what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me. I'm on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn, Kristen Harcourt as well. You can feel free to email me directly. And my email is kharcourt@mcquaig, which is mcquaig.com.
Great. So, folks, connect with Christine Harcourt on Twitter and connect with the McQuack Institute as well. And thank you so much to all of you for tuning to Drive Through HR, and we will talk to you all tomorrow with a wonderful guest. I mean, tomorrow means Monday, and I hope you all will enjoy the weekend. Thank you so much. Thanks, Christine. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.